This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with NewsWest for Sunday the 5th of July 2020. Today we look at new amateurs, recognising and supporting those who have just joined the hobby. I continue the new hams series, talking about a new amateur setting up for the first time, and Dan and Jeff have some words of wisdom along the same lines. Finally, we've got news of the rescheduled WIA AGM and Roy gives us helpline, and there's more on News West.
Getting into the hobby of amateur radio is as simple as getting in touch with Ham College, the Northern Corridor Radio Group, the Bunbury Radio Group, and getting your foundation license. To encourage new amateurs on air, we'd like to share with you the people who have gained, upgraded, or renewed their licenses in the past month. A few of these may still be awaiting payment, so be sure to check your status with the ACMA. At Advanced, Mitch, Robert, another Robert, David and Tony. At Foundation, Thomas, Samuel and Stephen. For new calls, congratulations on joining amateur radio. And if you're a dab hand, enjoy your new on-air identity. Of course, if you hear these calls on air, please make them feel welcome. In case you're wondering, there are 1,411 amateur licenses held in VK6 today. A concern is that this appears to be a net loss of licenses. Maybe there is an increased accuracy of the data from the ACMA.
Hello everyone, this is Clive, VK6 Charlie Sierra Whiskey, reminding you that the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia's July bulletin goes to air tomorrow morning. This month, as well as all the latest club news, we tell you about the recent committee meeting via Skype, plus articles on loneliness, the last Amelia Earhart communications, the history of SOS, and a piece about Bob Cunningham, the founder of the RAOTC. Everyone, RAOTC members and non-members alike, is most welcome to tune in and to join in the callbacks afterwards. There are three transmissions available to WA listeners tomorrow morning. The first transmission will be on digital mobile radio. This will be on the VKDMR network, Talk Group 5, at 9 a.m. WA local time, or 0100 UTC. The second transmission is also at 9 a.m. on 80 metres on 3620 kHz from either Chris VK6JI or Phil VK6GX. The third is at 10 a.m. on 40 metres on 7088 kHz, simultaneously with the transmission via the NewsWest linked repeater system. This month, due to my unavailability, Chris VK6JI has very kindly volunteered to stand in for me. Remember too that you can download the bulletin at any time from today from the RAOTC website, www.raotc.org.au. If you do listen via the internet, your feedback via email would be appreciated. On Wednesday, July the 8th, we have a new D-Star broadcast. This will be transmitted on D-Star Reflector 91C and will follow the D-Star Newsline and its world affiliates at 5:30 p.m. Western Australian Time. On Sunday, July the 12th, the RAOTC Bulletin will follow the HF broadcasts of the WIA News by Phil VK6GX and Chris VK6JI. Once again, tune in tomorrow at 9 a.m. on DMR Network Talk Group 5, or 9 a.m. on 80 metres, or 10 a.m. on either 40 metres or your favourite NewsWest repeater for the July RAOTC broadcast, and we look forward to hearing your call sign in the callbacks afterwards. Stay safe, and 7-3 from Clive, VK6CSW.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to NewsWest.
When you embark on your journey into this diverse hobby of amateur radio, where the heck do you begin? Welcome to New Hams, and I'm going to talk about building your station. First and foremost, amateur radio is a hobby. The Oxford Dictionary defines a hobby as an activity done regularly in one's leisure time for pleasure. Assuming your life, family, and household had no previous afflictions attributable to the amateur radio hobby, things are about to get real. Firstly, some corner of your home, whether it's a cupboard in the corner or a purpose-built edifice in the backyard, you're going to need something or some place that you can call your shack. And if your hobby is going to operate from home, you'll need to put up antennas of some description for more effective operation. And before I go on, let me get something out of the way. Today I'm not going to talk about setting up and operating a remote station, nor will I devote time to using PC-based access to repeaters via Echolink, etc. These can come later. Today I want to talk about the physical shack that you'll set up. Regardless of what your shack is in physical terms, and by that mean it could range from a table in the corner of the kitchen to a dedicated shed, you're going to need some basic equipment to make it work. Assuming you're wanting to move beyond a handheld radio, you'll need to consider things like the availability of power outlets and how you'll get your antenna feed lines into the shack. Setting up a shack inside the house may require expensive negotiations with the Minister for the Interior, and hopefully you won't need to involve the War Office. The fun part is antennas. Well, it is for me. Unless you're only putting up a stick antenna for VHF, UHF and maybe 6 metres, you're going to need to use some real estate. In modern housing developments where the average backyard is quite small, putting up effective HF antennas can present a real challenge. Vertical antennas may solve some problems depending on whether or not they need a web of ground plane. I've seen installations where the vertical is mounted on the ridge of a house roof and the ground plane wires spread out over the roof. There's lots of room to use your imagination and initiative. If you live in suburbia, it would be a good thing to be on good terms with your neighbours and to be prepared to challenge local government when they tell you you can't do that. Often the local government officer is dealing with a complaint from someone in the neighbourhood, and their prime objective is to satisfy the complainant and shut them up. You need to be firm and polite and make sure you get their name. And instead of focusing on satisfying the complainant, ask the council officer to explain to you what the law and regulations are and to explain what you must do to comply. Lastly, regarding antennas, you'll end up choosing between buying commercially made and homebrew. And it's your money and your choice. I think one of the advantages of homebrew is that you can get some wire into the air, and wire tends to be not so visible. And if you have friendly neighbours, you could probably make your wire a bit longer by running down the back fence or something. So good luck with setting up your new amateur radio installation, and I'd like to bet that whatever you set up now won't be the same as you'll be using in several years' time, because ours is a hobby of experimentation and exploration. I'm Bob VK6PAP.
Hi, this is Dan VK6NAD, recording this week from the beach at Cliffhead at the northern end of the Indian Ocean Drive. Yes, Bob finally tracked me down. Probably one of the bigger challenges for new amateurs is setting up a new shack. My advice is don't let your budget stop you. This goes especially for younger hands or those with young families. When I first learned of amateur radio in the 80s, I was only in my early teens, and the cost was my main barrier to entry. That and learning Morse code. Today, I've discovered there are lots of fun to be having from reviving old equipment and repurposing commercial gear. For instance, Philips PRM80s are known to be good radios. However, you'll find them in junk piles or at Hamfest for peanuts. Reason being, they're obsolete. They have limited numbers of memories and require programming on old DOS computers or using emulators such as DOSBox. However, for VHF or UHF mobile, in your car they are perfect, especially considering the small amount of repeaters actually in use when travelling around. Consider this kind of equipment as a gateway. It gets you on air and teaches you how to do it. Incidentally, many people consider these radios can only be programmed a limited number of times. Psh! Don't tell them. I have in possession an untested, by me, piece of software from the manufacturer to remedy that. Plus, you'll find there are other solutions to get around the limitations online. Baofang. Is that a dirty word? Couple of quick mods, like clearing the microphone hole of congestion, and you have a versatile VHF-UHF radio that most won't recognise as a cheap radio when on air if used correctly. And with removable antenna, the humble Baofeng can be the basis for many projects, including all-star nodes. Entry to HF. Nothing wrong with using an old radio for that, like my FT707 that travels the countryside behind the passenger seat in my car, or a decent kit radio like a Micro Bitex, which is even available in a non-soldered kit now. Expense really does not need to be a barrier to entry to amateur radio anymore. And don't forget, your local club is still the best place to begin. 7-3, this is VK6NAD, portable in Cliffhead, recording on an iPhone with a rotten old sock hanging off it.
How do you get your amateur radio information? I don't mean the technical stuff. There's enough of that in books and on the internet. I'm talking about what's going on around you in the amateur radio world. What are other people up to? What's worked and what hasn't? Do people have a general disinterest in what's happening in the world of amateur radio outside of their own shack? I've always wondered. Playing with numbers can be tricky and misleading, and there are things we can't measure, such as how many of us reach for the internet when we want to know something. Let's look at Western Australia. We have about 1,400 amateur radio licences here, including repeaters, beacons, club licences, and individuals who hold more than one call sign. So let's round it down to 1,000 amateurs in Western Australia, actual people. So how do 1,000 people find out what's happening on the local scene? If available information is to be believed, only a small number of us bother to find out. Let's start with news broadcasts. The news broadcast weekly callbacks in Western Australia vary between about 100 to 140 in a week, sort of 10% of our number. As unmeasurable variables come into play, such as people making more than one callback in a day and others who listen to the news and don't provide a callback, the Amateur Radio Western Australia Facebook group has 400 members, approximately, and we know that some of those aren't Western Australians, so somewhere up to 400 of them are Western Australian members, and I really wasn't up to counting my way through the member list. As with many Facebook groups, a lot of members are spectators. However, we don't actually know who is reading stuff and who isn't, because all we can see is when someone posts or replies or clicks on like, etc. Then there's email. Although clubs have their own email lists, not everyone's in a club. The central email list for VK6 amateurs is the WA Hams Google group, with somewhere around 350 members last time I asked. And there are posts every day. There's not much information available about how this group's emails are viewed. However, what can be seen in Google groups is that not many people actually read the emails. And that was surprising. It really was, because I was under the impression, as probably many of you are, that emails to WI Hams were widely read. I looked at the last 23 emails on the list. The number of times an email was viewed ranged from 7, that's 7 people viewing it, to 39, and the average is 19. The number of views increased where there were responses to the original post, and I'm not sure if Google counts a person once for the thread or counts them once for each time they look at replies. The number of views increased where there were responses to the original post, not surprisingly, and I'm not sure then if Google counts a person once for the thread or counts them once for each time they look at replies in the thread. But yes, you heard it correctly, an average of 19 views per post, and as few as 6 or 7. It was 19.5 actually. That's just under 2% of the amateurs in Western Australia. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not having a ping at the WA Hams Google group. I'm simply amazed at the numbers of people who actually open the emails. We haven't put a counter on the news downloads at vk6.net. We know that about 12 people are accessing the podcast. Overall, though, the information disseminating resources for amateur radio in this state, and quite likely in other states too, don't appear to be reaching amateurs. Or amateurs are not accessing it, whichever way you prefer to look at it. I don't know the answers, do you? Because I'd like to know. As a person who invests time and energy in providing information to the amateur radio community, I'd like to know if there are answers to it. So please do respond. Send something to newswest@vk6.net.
This is NewsWest, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the NewsWest linked repeater network and HF relays.
Today in this series on digital modes, I'm going to talk about WSJTX, which isn't a mode at all. Rather, it's a piece of software that brings together a suite of modes that come from the stable of Joe Thomas, Kilo 1 JT. Remember JT because it'll make some sense later on. Firstly, let's talk about Joe. Joe Taylor first obtained his amateur radio license as a teenager, which led him to the field of radio astronomy. Joe is well known in the field of amateur radio weak signal communication. You've probably heard of the JT modes, but maybe you've had no experience of them. An early mode still widely used today is WSPR, pronounced as whisper, and WSPR stands for Weak Signal Propagation Reporter, and it basically turns your station into a beacon and a listening post for beacons. Using very little power, in many cases loads less than 1 watt, whisper signals are heard around the world and the results posted to a central database and displayed on a map. Then along came the JT modes. Most of the popular JT modes were not designed to the way they are used today. The very first, JT65, was designed for Earth-Moon-Earth experiments, and currently it's used for HF weak signal around the globe communication. The most popular now and the most recent is FT8, designed for sporadic E on 60 meters. The current usage is for low frequency, medium frequency, and HF DXing. Some of the modes never were very popular, although suited the goal much better than the popular ones like JT9. Current high interest in the FT8 mode made WSJTX a very popular, and it makes all these modes easily accessible to everybody in one piece of software. So how does it work? At a basic level, these modes use frequency shift keying, and if you listen to the audio signal, it will sound like a continuous whistle with the frequency moving up and down. A limited amount of information is carried in each burst, usually enough to establish and confirm a QSO, that is, call signs, locational signal reports. Some modes allow a small amount of additional data. The beauty of these JT modes is that the software can decode signals that are inaudible to the operator, and these signals don't need a wad of watts behind them. And furthermore, the later modes employ a form of error correction. The most widely used mode at present is FT8. You've probably seen the negative, snide remarks, mostly from people with no experience of the modes, claiming that these JT modes are automatic, with QSOs being established without operator intervention. I can't even begin to know or understand the motivation of people who repeat this information. Amateur radio is, I thought, a hobby of learning and development. Yes, this ignorance and negativity comes from surprisingly hitherto respected sources. Rant over. The JT modes, all of which are embraced in the WSJTX software, are well worth a look and a bit of experimentation. There's always a learning curve when you venture into new modes. However, there's plenty of online help and discussion that will get you on air. Give these modes a try and make up your own mind about them. This article was based on information published by Alex, W5KAO, and on the WSJTX website.
The hobby of amateur radio embraces a huge variety of interests and activities, and it would be a rare person who could stake a genuine claim on having done it all. I doubt if such a person would actually exist, because new interests and developments are added to the hobby continuously. One aspect of the hobby that is easy to get into and embraces several aspects of the hobby is contesting. Next week, News West will be talking about contesting. We'll talk about contests that are coming up, and where available, we'll put people's contest stories to air. How about sharing a contest story with us? A contest you took part in, things you do to prepare for a contest, and so on. Believe it or not, these stories are interesting to other people. So how about sharing? Send your story to newswest@vk6.net. While we're on about contesting, the IARU HF Championship is on next weekend. Have a go, or at least have a listen, to see how contests operate. Because the weekend after, there's the Trans-Tasman, which is a fun contest. More on that next week in the News West Contesting Edition.
So you're new to amateur radio. Have you heard about repeaters and wondered what these things can do? Today we'll give you a layman's rundown on the repeater network. Often one of the first things a new amateur gets stuck into is using repeaters. It's one of the ways you can get on air quickly and cheaply. In the Perth metro area, there's a number of repeaters to choose from dotted around the locations. Some are on the Darling Scarp and some in other locations around Perth, and there are a number spread around country areas. Repeaters are used to extend the range of equipment that otherwise would only operate on line of sight. With a low-powered handheld VHF or UHF radio, assuming you're within range of a repeater, your range can be extended greatly. Most repeaters in use are on VHF or UHF, although there are others in Perth in the gigahertz range and on 6 and 10 metres. In a nutshell, in my best non-technical language, a repeater listens on one frequency and transmits on another frequency, usually in the same band, but not necessarily. When your own radio is set up to transmit and receive on the matching pair of frequencies, you're ready to talk. As you will have learnt when you studied for your licence, accessing repeaters requires a little bit of setting up. However, the results are worth it. You might be wondering by now where all those repeaters are and which frequencies do they use. You'll be pleased to learn that locating this information is easy. It really is. In the good old days, this sort of information was contained in a call book. Here in Australia, this has now been published annually by the WIA. The call book is well and good, but like any paper publication, the data is only up to date as the day it was compiled. These days, with the internet and apps that will run on handheld devices like iPhone and tablets, probably the best and most used phone app is one called Repeater Book. This app has a global database and operates with GPS positioning, and you can set the preferences for it for a list of repeaters within a desired distance from your location. You can even select which bands you're interested in. Repeater Book will give you the call sign, frequencies, CTCSS codes if applicable, distance and direction from you, and other information. This app is available for Apple and Android devices, and it's free. There's also a website, repeaterbook.com, with the repeaters listed. Today's snippet of information to answer a question you may never have asked is that according to the Repeater Book website, there are 705 repeaters in Australia. Good luck with getting on air with repeaters. If you're stuck and can't make it work, ask a local amateur. Or if you can't find someone, get in touch with the News West team by an email to newswest@vk6.net. And one of our team will help you out or suggest someone local to you. Clubs are a good source for help, and they ought to be coming out of that COVID hibernation about now. There's a listing of Western Australian amateur radio clubs on the VKE6.net website.
The Wireless Institute of Australia has announced the rescheduled annual general meeting. The announcement was made on the WIA's website. The meeting will take place physically at the WIA's Melbourne premises with minimal physical attendance. Other members may attend via a yet-to-be-disclosed online streaming method, and that will probably be Google Meet, as they've been tinkering with that service lately. The link will only be given to those members who register for it, and the attendance register will consist only of those who do register and those who send apologies. Members will need to register to receive the streamed broadcast. Online registrations will be accepted on and from Friday the 17th of July, and will close at midnight on Friday the 24th, 2020. The announcement contains download links for the agenda, the reports, and a form to give your proxy vote to another member. There are no notices on motion apart from a few procedural motions. If you can't attend and you wish your vote to be counted in case a motion from the floor does arise, you should complete your proxy form and nominate someone, and that someone must be a member who will attend the meeting, that you're happy to have cast a vote on your behalf. The proxy form should be sent to the Secretary of the WIA, and please advise the person that you nominated. I'm planning to register to attend and would be happy to be nominated as a proxy holder, but feel free to choose someone else. But please do remember to check first that the person you're nominating as a proxy will be attending the meeting.
This is VK6 Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN.
Now this from Bob VK6ZRT. And Bob says that the Bunbury Radio Club has gone into limbo due to the coronavirus until at least September, when it's planned to hold the annual general meeting. As mentioned last month, they've lost the use of their regular meeting premises and are in the process of finding a new one. It's not a good time to be searching given all the restrictions on non-essential meetings, etc. Any suggestions would be welcome. On a better note, VK6RBY, the Bunbury 2 metre and 70 centimetre repeaters are now operational, and signal reports from all areas would be very welcome. And the details of these repeaters are the 70 centimetres, 438.650 with a minus 5 MHz offset, and a 123Hz CT CSS access tone. And the 2 metre repeaters, 146.650 MHz with the minus 600 kHz offset, and no access tone required. In the medium term, the club proposes to add All-Star to their 2 metre repeater and IRLP to the 70 centimetre repeater.
Good morning, everyone. This is Roy, VK6XV, with this week's helpline for the 5th of July, 2020. Today I have one here from Barry. He's looking for a Kenwood transceiver, Tango Sierra 590 Sierra, in good working order, and must have the voice option installed. As Barry's a white stick operator, he needs the voice operation on it. If you can help Barry with a Kenwood TS590 Sierra, he's in the eastern states at the moment, but if you'd like to get him on his email, which is bravo alpha romeo yankee dot mike india tango charlie hotel echo lima lima figure 5 at bigpond.com. That's barry.mitchell5@bigpond.com. If you can help me with that 590 Sierra Kenwood, he'd be very grateful to hear from you. He got burnt out recently and lost all his equipment. He's trying to re-establish again. So if you can help Barry, please get on to him and give him a hoy. Just say g'day anyway. That's his email address, barry.mitchell5@bigpond.com. And that's all I have for you. But I have been sending out jokes and other stuff which has been declared to me as being spam. I didn't think it was spam. I was just doing it to a bit of lightheartedness. But I've had one dissenter and quite a few people saying cool or great stuff or other words of encouragement. But if you do not wish to receive my joke material or other information that I'm sending out along with the helpline, please let me know and I'll delete it from that point. So but I thought it was quite interesting just to see some of this stuff and put a bit of levity in the somber surroundings that we are finding ourselves in at the moment. Anyway, that's enough for me. VK6XV, the email address is victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. 7-3 till next week.
News West is written and recorded to inform Western Australian amateurs about what's going on around them in their hobby. We're only as good as our sources, so if there's something you've seen, heard of, done or about to do, you can share it with the rest of us by sending your story to News West. You can send a story in text form and we'll arrange to record it. You could record it yourself, just use the best quality audio available to you, or ask us to contact you via Skype, Zoom or similar, and the recorded conversation can be edited to create what looks like an interview. You know you can do it. Send all contributions as email attachments to newswest@vk6.net. Thanks to the team this week for your hard work. Dan, VK6NAD, Mike, VK6KMS, and Jeff, VK6FJLM. I'm Bob, VK6POP, the producer. Thanks also to the broadcasters and the callback counters. It would be pretty quiet out there without you, wouldn't it? We're into contesting next week and I anticipate another full program. From all of us at News West, 7-3, and now it's time for you to give your callback, then get on air and make some noise for the rest of this week.